Hey, Doc Danny here, and I just want to say thank you for listening to the PT Entrepreneur Podcast. If you want to get involved in the conversation and get your questions answered and feedback from myself and 1,500 other people within the PT Entrepreneur community, head over to Facebook and join the PT Entrepreneurs Facebook group. This is a great group for anybody that is in business or thinking about going into business for themselves and wants the support of other people like me and other practitioners out there that are entrepreneurs. So guys, thanks for listening. Enjoy this episode. So here's the question. How do physical therapists like us, who don't want to see 30 patients a day, who don't want to work home health, and have real student loans, create a career and life for ourselves that we've always dreamed about? This is the question, and this podcast is the answer. My name is Danny Matei, and welcome to the PT Entrepreneur Podcast. What's up, guys? Doc Danny here at the PT Entrepreneur Podcast, and we're restarting number two with Teddy Wilsey. We had an amazing intro you guys aren't going to get to hear because our fucking internet sucks, and that's all right. This one's going to be even better. So we're talking about business today with Teddy instead of strength and conditioning. We'll probably get into some of that, man. How do we not talk about strength and conditioning? We'll obviously talk about that, but what we really want to know is the background of, you know, how you got into this stuff, what you're doing from a business standpoint, and also, you know, what you're doing digitally, because there's some really cool stuff that we can do now with different social media platforms, but also remote programming. And it seems to be like you've done a really good job of kind of mixing all that stuff together, as well as your, it looks like, affiliation with BSN, which, boy, I used to take that, was it NO Explode back in the day, just get veiny as shit.
Awesome. Everybody took that like 10, 12 years ago.
I took way more than the recommended dose. And yeah, I'd just go in there, I'd be like scratching my face like crazy. You know, it was good stuff. So anyway, all right, dude, let's do this. So let's get into your background. Like, how'd you end up getting to PT school? Because I know you're sort of involved in strength and conditioning before that, right?
Yeah, exactly. So my initial interest, kind of like a lot of young PTs or PT wannabes, came from high school. I had shoulder surgery in high school. And so, you know, going into college and choosing what classes I was going to take, I went the exercise science route with all the pre-PT, the bios, chems, all that good stuff. But then I had the very fortunate experience of interning under Buddy Morris, who's now the strength coach out with the Arizona Cardinals. Cool. And he was a huge influence for me, and I fell in love with strength and conditioning. So I said, you know what? I'm not going to apply to PT school right now. I'm going to go down this strength and conditioning route. And I did that for 4 years. And then I went to PT school.
So where, what kind of facility did you work at for 4 years?
I worked in, it was a private facility. I did a lot of kind of personal training, strength and conditioning with the high school kids in the afternoons. I drove to some high schools. I taught some group exercise in the mornings. I bartended at night for about a year and a half in that time span, you know, so I did pretty much anything I could to make enough to put together a you know, enough to pay my rent and all that good stuff.
Well, you know, what's interesting is like, I feel like from an entrepreneur standpoint, like these sort of diverse backgrounds and jobs and stuff, like you learn like sort of these inherent skills along the way. Like for instance, bartending, you have to learn how to be able to like do multiple things at once, and you have to be able to communicate with people really well. Like that's just a really good skill, man. Like huge.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, I had the same thing. I was a waiter for like 4 years, which is a shitty job. The bartender was always way cooler. And like, what? Why can't I start bartending? And they're like, no, you got to wait these tables, dude. But still, you have to learn how to like put up with different personalities and be able to read people and stuff. So I think it's a huge benefit, man. So, okay. So you get done with that and you decide, why go back to PT school? Like, what was it about that you were finally like, dude, I just got to pull the trigger on it.
Oh man, I wanted to learn more, and I was still, you know, obsessed with the field in general and rehab. And I probably read every single blog that Mike Reinhold and Eric Cressy and Mike Robertson and all those guys had written, and Brett Contreras, et cetera, et cetera. And so I wanted to continue to learn. And I thought that PT was, I don't know, like the top of our field, the top of the career. And so I was like, I want to keep on going. And, that was it. I mean, so by the time I went to PT school, I already had kind of what I'm doing now in mind. Like I had that vision of, I don't want to just be the normal PT. I want to be able to kind of blend the stuff I know now with the physical therapy side of things.
Was there anybody that you worked with that was already doing that you had seen, like whether it be not just necessarily in person, but anybody you saw, you're like, man, I really like the way that they're sort of blending these two together and were able to sort of model after that?
Not that much, like not from a private industry standpoint. I knew that in the public sector and with professional sports and college and all that, there were some practitioners that kind of had the ability to blend. One thing that's interesting I've learned now is that there's actually still a lot of separation even in those environments, as well as in the private industry. But no, there wasn't one person that was doing exactly what I wanted to do. I would say somebody like Cressy, who, you know, just had that entrepreneurial aspect to what he was doing. He had the high performance handbook. He had the, you know, the, all the great writing that he does. I think that he was probably somebody that was a, I don't know, goals, so to speak.
Well, did you, so you went to PT school, you get out, now you're working with Healthy Baller as their performance director, but you talk about the entrepreneurial side of things, which I think is huge, sort of the ability to be creative and sort of come up with solutions to problems and then, you know, and really have no ceiling on what you can make, right? And or earn, I guess, associated with that. So for you, it seems like, you know, you've got a pedigree of strength conditioning, PT, all that stuff. But then for some reason, like as social media hit and you had the right message, like, things align in a way where it's pretty powerful for you. You have a 500,000 people that follow you on a platform where, you know, they people look at pictures all day. Like, that's a pretty powerful thing, right? So how did all of that start?
So my first year out of PT school, I worked at a physician-owned kind of a pain clinic. And at that point, I thought to myself, I just need to get my hands on as many people as possible. You hear a lot of young PTs. A lot of young PTs that are interested in this cash practice. They start off, you know, on the insurance side of things. So I did that, and then I approached Healthy Baller. A friend of mine, Blair O'Donovan, who's now the strength coach with the Washington Wizards, at the time, he and his business partner had just opened up Healthy Baller. And I said to Blair, I said, hey, what if I just stick a table in that corner over there? And he was like, what do you mean? And I was like, I'll leave my job. And I know you guys need some coaching help right now, because they were growing. I was like, let me come over there, start coaching, and then slowly build up the PT side of things. So I was able to do that and kind of have this cross bridge in terms of building the PT career where I still had some income. You know, I started doing group programs again. I started doing just literally strength and conditioning, no PT whatsoever. Wasn't putting my hands on people. And so for me, it was a great refresher in the strength and conditioning side of things, getting back into on-field drills, because I'd spent a year working with people with back pain, you know. And so once I got back into that, the Instagram started growing at the same time. I started the Instagram. I started that October of 2016, so a little over 2 years ago. And it was just right place, right time, and connecting with and like networking with a lot of good people early on. You know, because at that point, like, I'd already written some blog posts at some point in time, been reposted by people like Meekins or Brett Contreras, or like, I'd already kind of, you know, I interned with Nick Tumanello, many years ago. I'm not sure if you're familiar with him. He's a kind of a prolific T Nation writer. And he won Personal Trainer of the Year from the NSCA. Cool. So I'd already networked with a lot of people in the social media space. And when I started to grow my account, some of them were supportive, and it all took off, man. It was, you know, kind of like a lot of things. I was first to market. Like, I was one of the early ones. I was one of the early people putting anatomy pictures on the posts, and kind of like coming to Instagram from an educational standpoint.
No, it makes sense. You know, it is interesting to hear the backstory though, because, you know, people are always like, oh, that guy's an overnight success 7 years later. You know, it's just like, oh yeah, all these things that I did, you know, and and facilities that you worked at and all this stuff. And it's just never really that simple, right? It's never just like, no one looks into that, something like that. Like, it takes a lot of hard work. And it also does help to have, you know, relationships with people that are influential as well, and help to position you in a way to where you're looked at as subject matter expert, you know, early on, instead of having to maybe earn that in the eyes of other people. So let's talk about your cash practice for a second. So you approach this company, and this was what year was that?
2016.
So 2016, at the same time. Okay.
Yeah, late spring, early summer is when we first started talking. So I've been out of PT school for a year.
Gotcha. All right. So when you first started, how long did it take for you to build some decent volume within that?
Oh man, it took a while. I went 3 months without seeing one person for physical therapy.
Damn.
And then the first person I saw was a like 5 or 6 month post-op ACL.
Yeah.
And she had already been discharged from PT.
Oh yeah.
But she still needed physical therapy. And so, you know, I had that kind of that awkward conversation of, hey, you know, I'm doing physical therapy with your daughter. And so it was like this awkward transition because people in that facility had looked at me as a strength coach for the past 3 months.
Right.
They didn't know that I spent, or they weren't able to conceptualize that I spent the previous year and then all my training in private treatment rooms doing more, you know, PRIE, whispering backs better, like all of like the total different end from strength and conditioning, you know? And so I just kind of slowly transitioned, built that up, and it was a fucking mess sometimes. I had a PT treatment table about 3 feet from a lifting platform.
Yeah.
And so when people would, people would be deadlifting and we had to have talks with the staff about like being respectful of when I had somebody on the treatment table. And we tossed down all these different ideas. And then one day I was just like, we kind of had to talk, and it wasn't a bad ultimatum, but it was just a like, hey guys, the direction this is going, I'm treating 20 plus every week. And it's been that way for 6 months straight, having weeks over 30, I need some walls. And, so then it was kind of like, well, where are we going to put those walls? And I was like, well, what about that corner? And so, so I made the promise then that if we built that, I would bring in another PT. So I brought in another PT, Wesley Wang. You might be familiar with him. He's on social too. And he's got great ACL stuff,
by the way.
Yeah. He's getting right up close to 100K now. So he's been killing it on social media and doing a great job with all the kids and everything in person. And so I brought in Wesley, and that was October. So that was a year after I saw my first PT patient. I was able to bring in the second PT.
Cool.
And I guaranteed him 12 a week. I didn't have a salary to offer him. It's a cash PT model. I told him, you gotta go out there and market and get to know the people that walk in and out of the gym. And the gym itself is a huge referral source.
Yeah, totally.
And so, we have the turf field, and we have team programs that come in and out. We know most of the high school coaches in the area. So he's done a great job with that, and he sees more people per week than I do now.
That's good, man. I mean, just from an infrastructure standpoint, cash PT. So, okay, 3 months, nothing. That's a long time, by the way. Like, the fact that you stuck that out is I know plenty of people, you know. People,
I was busy, though. I was busy with coaching, so it was okay.
Yeah, we had other things going on. I mean, I had somebody ask me the other day, they were like, did you ever think about just stopping, like giving up if your business wasn't doing well? And I was like, no, hell no. I never thought about that. Like, what would I do? Go work for some hospital? Like, there's no other alternative, man. I mean, like, it was going to happen. So I think for you, it's interesting that, once you got to that point, you're able to grow so quickly. What do you think were some of the variables that helped you grow to the point where you're able to bring a second PT on about a year out? That's pretty fast for a cash practice.
So I think it was, even though social media has played a huge role, don't get me wrong. I've had hundreds of people come in from social media. I've had people, athletes travel from overseas, from Atlanta, from California. But I think that the single biggest thing that it's not reasonable to tell everybody, hey, go get 500K followers. Like, I don't think I could do it again if I tried, but it is what it is. I think the biggest factor was bringing a new business model to an area that was able to support it economically and had that need. You know, this gym, let's be honest, Bethesda that you mentioned, like this is an area that has families that are willing to invest in their kids, and they have the means to do so. And so I knew that, and I knew that we were able to grow this with a patient population that was predominantly high school athletes and active adults. And there's tons of those around here. And so I think that teaming up with a gym and a place that, everything I've done along the way, I'm not doing it on my own. I had somebody to help me. If I just opened up like a small little office in an office building somewhere, I don't think that would work. The CrossFit model, I think that those work. There's a lot of PTs opening up in CrossFit gyms. Mm-hmm. This was just a little bit different because I really wanted to go the sports performance route with the athletes. And I think that was the biggest factor.
Yeah, you make a good point about the area. I know, we have some people we've worked with in the DC area. And I think that there's also something to be said for that area. I don't know if it's that like people want a solution to a problem faster. They're like very, they value their time a lot. Like they're just like, you don't have time for this. It's either a convenience option or you can do this faster. Okay, let's do it. And also youth athletics. I mean, what people in some cases are not willing to pay for themselves, for little Johnny, who they think is going to play college soccer potentially, like Yeah, totally. We'll invest in him, you know, for whatever the health of his body. So I think that's huge. What percentage of your population is youth athletes versus adults at this point between you and Wesley?
I would say that we are probably 70% youth athletes. Athletes really? Under the age of 22.
So yeah. When you work with these athletes, so this brings up sort of some like interesting parameters in terms of they're not always available to be there, right? So like, are there funnel times for, like, I'm assuming before and after school is probably the times when you can really work with them the most.
Yeah. So, you know, for example, today I'll be with people straight through from 2 to 8. So I just run at a 6 hour block.
Yeah.
That's the kind of thing that Wesley does as well. We try to fill the early afternoon with our active adults if we can get them in there. But yeah, there's certainly time limitations. That's a huge challenge of working with athletes. Our schedule is very seasonal. So in the summer we have, you know, we have the flexibility. The kids are out of school. Mm-hmm. They usually like to come in earlier in the day. In the fall and spring, the schedule's not that great. It's funny though, because college kids are never in freaking school. Yeah. You know, like they're home for like 5 days over Thanksgiving. They're home for a month over winter break. Then we have like 3 weeks of spring break that they kind of sprinkle in. And we work with so many high school kids that transition to college athletics that these college kids, and they're more serious, the stakes are higher. They're seeing us even more. So the summer is our busiest time, even though, you know, some kids are out of town and whatnot. So it's definitely a challenge. And we talk about that a lot. I have a friend who is a high school transition coach now, but he did this for many years in the private sector, and he always talked about it as morning money. You have to have some way to make your morning money, because you cannot make all your money from 2 to 8 p.m. And you're going to sacrifice your social life, your family life, and that sort of thing too.
Yeah. No, totally. I mean, when you look at like how that's set up, I mean, it is a bit challenging, you know, but the parents, I would assume, are probably the other variable from the kids that end up becoming clients as well. Is that something that you guys see a lot of? Like, I work with their, you know, little Ben, but then I saw his dad because he tweaked his back trying to play pickup soccer with his buddies that, you know, don't do shit all day.
Yeah, we see some of that. And we always talk about how we can convert a little bit more, but it's not as much as you might assume. And I think it might just be because parents view our facility as like the kid facility.
Yeah.
So they don't think of us as appropriate for them. And we're okay with that. You know, Wesley made a conscious decision to market himself as an ACL specialist, and having had two on his own, he knew a few things about going through the process as well as rehabbing them. And so, you know, when we made brochures, and we do a lot of in-house marketing because we get so many eyes, you know, on like kind of our front desk and that whole area and the bulletin board. And so when we decided to take this new in-house marketing approach, we were like, all right, ACLs. Like, we have enough freaking kids in here that just tear their ACL that we could literally fill a schedule, a whole PT caseload with ACLs. So let's, instead of saying, hey, we have PT and we do everything, let's say we will get your ACL, like we will help you with your ACL more than another physical therapist would. And we feel confident saying that as well. You know, that's the other thing, is there's a void or kind of a, you know, there's not as good care sometimes in these physician-owned, really busy clinics. Let's just be honest.
Totally.
And I hate sitting around bashing PTs all day. I think that most of us really want are well-meaning, and most of us are not lazy and don't care, but it's just, we're kind of part of this system that's not going in the right direction for musculoskeletal care.
Well, the challenge is if you have a, let's say, a moderate to high level youth athlete, and they go to this sort of work comp geriatric patient clinic, that's predominantly what they see. Their skill set, for the most part, is set up to work with that population, right? Like, they're good at that, and that's what they do. And not only that, but it's also multiple people at once. And you may not have the time to really be able to go through like load, you know, reabsorption and how you start to progress these things. Or frankly, maybe they don't have the strength and conditioning background to understand those things, and they didn't learn in school, and or maybe they have no interest in that, right? So I think that it's a very smart marketing decision, in my opinion, for Wesley to do that and to say, you know, I'm the ACL guy. Because if you think about how many people have ACL tears, and it's a lot. And not only that, but there's a lot of volume associated with that. You know, it's not like it's two visits and they're good to go, you know, and that actually brings up a good point. So for you guys seeing post-ops, how has that been marketing to that with, with people that in many cases it's like, hey, this is going to be quite a few visits. And I know that you have a copay and you've probably met your in-network, you know, deductible or whatever because of the surgery. What are some of the things that you've had success with talking to these parents primarily about, you know, why it is that they would want to invest in this type of work versus going to this, you know, whatever in-network practice?
Yeah. So, we don't have a front desk, so, we're taking all those phone calls. And, when you have that conversation with the parent, you're trying to explain to them that this service is a little bit different. It's more athlete focused, athlete driven. We can help to reduce things like, you know, re-injury due to fatigue and that sort of thing. Yeah. We also like, cause we can help to, you know, get the kid back in shape while they're also rehabbing. But I think the biggest thing is being honest, you know, being honest and forthcoming and saying, hey, look, and, you know, attacking the price conversation head on. Hey, look, I know that this is more expensive. It might make sense for you to work with your in-network PT for a couple months and then come over and work with us. Maybe 3 or 4 months out, I think that'll be a great time for Sarah to start to, you know, progress back into cutting and on-field movement. And that's when we are really going to separate ourselves in terms of our ability to help her. You know, and it's like that kind of conversation. And then we also say, hey, you might be thinking that 4 to 5 months, because you know so-and-so, research shows that pretty much every week after 7 months that you delay coming back, you're reducing your risk, like the relative risk likelihood by like 10%, you know, of re-tearing. I mean, there's a lot of power in being patient and getting all the way back. And we have a, you know, a variety of objective measures that we use to really help to determine how, when the athlete's ready as well. We see a lot of people that slip through the cracks and a lot of people that are already unhappy with their care. And with that's the majority. And with those people, there's not much marketing you have to do or not much like convincing. I mean, they know that the PT elsewhere is just not sufficient. And unfortunately it's an easy sell for us, but I don't like knowing that if somebody says, oh, I'm going to PT, I'm like almost like, ooh, I wonder what kind of experience you're having. Like, you know, you wouldn't just send your mom to any old PT. And so that's the reality.
No, that's a really good point, man. I mean, the easiest sell is the people that have experienced what they don't want to go back to. You know, like I had a guy one time, this is very early on when we started our practice. And I remember he came in, he was a CrossFit athlete. He brings in this, this handout of the shuttle machine. Like, you know, like the little like corded, like rebounder kind of looking deal, leg press thing. And there's like a 75-year-old woman in a picture on it. And there's like describing how to do the shuttle, single leg shuttle correctly. Right. Now this guy could back squat like 400 pounds. Like he's a strong dude. And he comes in and he puts it on my desk. He was like, look at this bullshit. And he's like, never going back there again. And he had called us. Yeah. What's funny is he had called us and he was like, no, man, it's not in network. Like I'm not going to pay $200 or whatever. And we're like, okay, cool. You can go check this place out. And we didn't know he'd have that bad of experience, but he came back and, you know, he'll never go back to a place like that. So I think that's really interesting that you found that that's just such an easy sell, because we found the exact same thing. You know?
Yeah.
And, you know, I wonder with Wesley at this point too, you know, focusing on the ACL stuff for you guys, like you do a lot of internal marketing, but is that, I mean, obviously Instagram, he does a lot of stuff on that, but do you use other kind of content channels as well to sort of kind of get people better information about ACL, you know, surgeries and how they can recover for them, you know, more effectively?
Yeah, we actually have one physician that's been a pretty good supporter of us, or one orthopedic surgeon specifically, and he is, I don't know, he's probably the only freaking orthopedic surgeon on the East Coast that doesn't own their own physical therapy practice. Wow. You know, but I mean, just everybody here, I don't know how it is with, do all of your surgeons own practices?
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and this one guy, he's like the diamond in the rough. But anyway, so we have a direct referral source from one physician. We have relationships with coaches, and we also get a lot of like athlete word of mouth referrals, you know, like you should check out these guys. They work in Healthy Baller Gym or they're at Healthy Baller Physical Therapy and that's where you should rehab. Cause a lot of the athletes do know the difference between the brown carpet and the shuttle machine or whatever, you know, and the low ceilings and that bad lighting and, you know, the budget physical therapy clinic with the dinosaur 1980s. Machine. So I mean, I would say that that's probably the best resource. We also, we try to talk to the coaches. We try to talk to athletic trainers, you know, take them out to lunch, get to know the different people in the area, especially in the kind of the private school route, because a lot of the private schools around here have athletic training, strength conditioning staffs already. So getting to know them is a, there's a little more of like a system in place, whereas the public schools in this area, they don't have that as much of that. So you have to know, if you want to work with this kind of athlete or this kind of patient population, you have to know everything about what's going on with the schools and the athletic systems and the private, like all the private leagues, like the select soccer leagues, mm-hmm. and how important those are to these kids and how that's where the college recruits go. And so you you have to get to know those coaches, and man, it's just, there's a lot of networking and just getting and just being involved in the athletic world.
Well, have you noticed any kind of turf war sort of in a way with any of the trainers that are like, you know, like, well, I'll do the rehab.
You know, that always happens. I mean, I think that the movement field in general, all of us are fighting for our autonomy, whether it's a strength and conditioning coach, a physical therapist, an athletic trainer. You know, all three of us can do things that kind of overlap with each other. And I think if we're all three of us are enlightened, we can probably, like, what we do might look the same, because it should, if it's for any one sure. particular time in the rehab. So that's always a challenge. I mean, that's a challenge with if you have personal trainers that refer you clients.
Right.
Which personal trainers, in my experience, are not always the greatest referral sources, because they think they can kind of, not to bash on every personal trainer, but it can be a challenge sometimes. I've come across some that, do kind of, in my opinion, overstep their bounds. But do I overstep my bounds in terms of maybe, you know? I think that if you just viewed one session in isolation and you didn't know the whole context, you might think, oh, that looks like just strength and conditioning.
Right.
But you might not know that kids, their knee's still hurting them. They're still rehabbing their hamstring. I mean, like, whatever it is, you know, we want to create that blend so that there can be a challenge there sometimes. In-house, though, we have it pretty well managed. And that's what's important, our relationship with our coaches in-house.
I think it's fascinating, man. I mean, I just like having a niche is so important, you know, and for you guys to be able to establish that in the youth realm is what, you know, what you're good at. And then that bleeds over into these other active adults and their parents, or it's like the kid's uncle or something like that that does, you know, CrossFit. So it's a lateral transition, which is much easier. So getting known for one thing and then transitioning over can be huge. Now, social media, you said, has been beneficial from a standpoint of like getting patients and all that. So what have you found with social media besides just like volume of followers, but with Instagram in particular, is there anything that you've noticed, like posts that you put up, you're like, man, I get a lot of inquiries about people working with me whenever I talk about, you know, certain things versus other things?
To be honest, I haven't noticed that much of a direct effect, but I think that maybe one of the things that I talk about on social media a lot is kind of like ethics and morality and not making our patients addicted to manual therapy and that whole side of things and you know, the kind of the pain science psychology. I think that for some people that speaks to them and they can appreciate that maybe I'm approaching things from a little more of a holistic approach, a holistic, you know, mindset than some other therapists. I think that can help in terms of driving patient care or driving patients in. That's hard to say. I mean, I'm consistently surprised. So for example, if I have a guy who's 38 years old and doesn't really exercise or just started and he follows me and he really likes my content, like that's not, and he comes in wearing his loafers and his, you know, dress pants, like that's not the guy that I would have expected to ever come in from social media, but I get those kind of patients randomly too. I think social proof is a big part of it.
Yeah.
Because social media is international. The majority of my followers do not live in DC, but there's social proof that, oh, if so-and-so amount of people think he knows what he's doing, maybe I should give this guy a try.
So, that's a great point, man. It's perceived, like expertise is true and perceived in some cases, right? Like, and sometimes people that are truly experts, they don't have even the perception of it, but they could be, you know, incredibly smart and talented. It's sort of I tell this to people all the time. It's social media, like that 500,000 people that follow or whatever, like that social proof is inherently marketing. And if you don't have marketing driving people to come and see you, you can be amazing at what you do, but it doesn't mean that anybody's ever going to know because you're just not good at marketing yourself. It's so important for us to learn this, you know, and you know, for you, with the social media side of things that you found, I mean, you know, obviously it's driving patients. So you said you've had a couple hundred patients come in from social media. That's really interesting.
Easily. Yeah.
How many people do you see a month from Instagram?
That's hard to say, to be honest. It goes up and down. Not as much. I had a big pop like last year, I would say. I'm not getting as much consistent activity from there. But it's, at this point, you know, I've gotten word of mouth referrals from people that I initially connected with through Instagram.
Yeah, sure.
I've had people who already knew who I was. You know, so let's say I want to talk about two like little things from a marketing standpoint. So I think that when you hear of a physical therapist and you're like, oh, I want to go see them, you need to hear that from a few different dimensions or a few different sources to really want to come in. There's a reason why commercials play over and over again and you don't just see it once.
Yeah.
You know, you have to, and so I've had a lot of people that they've said, oh, I heard, like they heard of me from two different people, like a coach at their one CrossFit gym and then also somebody else, like a friend of a friend. And so I think that that's part of it, like the, just this overall spread. And the second thing is like when you approach social media and you are presenting yourself as a person, let's be honest, it's not all of you. It's not everything. Like there's a reason I'm not taking videos of me like drinking on Saturday night on my social. Like I want to, but if you follow me closely enough, you'll probably know that I'm like more of a laid back, normal guy in that regard. Like I'm not like a total gym machine. You know, but I want people to know like specific things about me in terms of I love working out. I power lift. I back squat over 400 pounds. I do it regularly. I like skiing. I like hiking. I like doing outdoor stuff. I'm married. I have two dogs. Like I want people to know these things about me to make me more relatable. And so I don't think it's fake, but we talk about like authenticity in social media. And yeah, this is my version of authenticity to try to show people who I really am.
That makes total sense, man. I mean, and you sort of have to find the platform that works best for you. And not everybody is going to be Instagram. I mean, for me, like the podcast is what I enjoy because it, just like you said, like, yeah, I might talk shit about my kid on this podcast, but because he's being a little jackass, not doing what I tell him to at some point, right? So like, but other people listening to this that have a little jackass kid occasionally, all of a sudden there's an inherent, you know, there's more of a bond there.
Yeah.
And it just shows that, you know, you're a regular person. You're a real person.
Exactly.
You know? And I do think that's really important. In fact, I think that's one of the things that's so attractive about social media, but it's also one of the things that's so easy to take out of social media. Yeah. Like if you could make everything look as great as you want, like if you took enough time to do that. Right. But I do think the bond, they talk about this, like the bond that you can develop with somebody else via social media is what can start a relationship and start to build trust. You know, I mean, you probably have people that come in and they're like, oh, this is weird. Like I'm used to seeing you so much.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Isn't that strange? All the time.
It's weird for me too. Cause I'm like, you know, more about me, like, you know, my dog's name or whatever, you know, this most recent trip I went on and like, I'm just a dude like 2 years ago before,
it's
like,
weird.
You know, I was recognized in a KFC at a rest stop on the Pennsylvania Turnpike a couple months ago. And it's just like, you know, I'm just like tired driving back from Pittsburgh where I went to undergrad and I'm just like getting some KFC with my wife. The guy's like, I can't believe Strength or Syrup is getting KFC. I'm like,
oh man, somebody's shaming you for some freaking mashed potatoes and gravy.
I know, man. Like
that shit's delicious. Yeah, seriously.
Calories don't count on Sundays.
No. Not only that, but you know, I feel like that makes it even that makes you even more relatable.
It was a great, yeah, it was like the perfect way to like run into a follower. But no, it's definitely weird. And you just want to kind of be yourself. Like I used to be big into Snapchatting like years ago. And I would just do goofy jokes and I probably had like, you know, 60 friends on there, just like close friends, whatever. And some of my friends were like, you know, you never Snapchat anymore. That now that you're always on your Instagram and I'm like, yeah, like you're right. And then we were like, man, I should just be a little more goofy or like make more jokes on my Instagram story. And like that was actually kind of a transition for me that I think made me more relatable. I don't know. Or maybe it didn't. It's so hard to say with marketing, you know, you never know exactly what works and what doesn't, but it's the body of work that, you know, it's still moving forward.
It's true. I feel like, I guess Snapchat's still out there. I don't use Snapchat, but my,
for the kids,
I sort of laugh. Well, my brother-in-law's Snapchat each other. This is going to sound weird, but I got to put it out there now. Every time that they take a dump, they Snapchat themselves actually pooping. And then they send it to the other one. And they've now done this for a very long time. It's really funny. But that's the only thing I know anybody uses it for. Maybe, I don't think everybody uses that, but my brother-in-law's have gross sense of humor.
there's like a streak thing. And if you go back and forth with somebody, I don't know if you have to do it every day or not, but I know some of the, one of the reasons I love working with high school kids is it keeps you young, but I know that, yeah, like from like I let them put on their own music on like the Google Home that's in the office and, you know, but no, I know that there's a streak thing on Snapchat and that might be what they have going. That's impressive though. Dude. That's dedication to the cause.
It's also like, I'm surprised they haven't dropped their phone in the toilet yet. Let me ask you, weird, but anyway, back to marketing. So here's what I also think is interesting is that, so you have this, this following that you've built, they're obviously coming in to see you as patients. Now, not too long ago, you were able to kind of move this to a digital platform, Citizen Athletics, with Sam Spinelli, and partner with him to be able to have this programming, online programming option as well. Was this intentional, like from the start, did you want to do something like that? Or was it more, I kept having people asking me about programs, and then finally I had to figure out a solution to this.
You know what it was, is it's like, you're trying to figure out how to quote unquote monetize your following and get back some of the time that you've invested into this platform. And for me, I'm trying to do it. It's very important to me to offer a valuable product and something I truly believe in. And also I don't have a ton of time. And so I was like, I know that I can't do this all on my own. And I was fortunate enough to meet Sam, in person last February. And we just immediately like hit it off. And then we started talking about some ideas of some a project to do together. And that's where it came, that's where we, you know, kind of hatched this idea. Sam and I have very similar backgrounds from the strength and conditioning PT blend. I think one of the reasons I get a lot of barbell athletes off of Instagram in person. So like a lot of CrossFitters, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. I think it's because they know that I've spent, you know, thousands of hours with the bar, like lifting with the barbell and they respect that from a like walk, you know, practice what you preach thing. So Sam's the same way. And not that I think everybody needs to be like a total meathead to know how to coach, but Sam and I just had a lot of things that we connected on. And then we were like, all right, well, we know there's a lot of good, no disrespect to any coaches out there that put out training programs, but we know that we could do a really bang up job and we could put together good warm ups and good prehab work. And Sam's been nursing a FAI, kind of needs to have surgery on his hip thing for a couple years. And I've had two shoulder surgeries, and the most recent one, I dislocated my shoulder skiing, and that's why I needed surgery. So it wasn't a lifting injury, but that was a gnarly injury. But anyway, so Sam and I have both been through it from an injured standpoint, from a programming standpoint, and we were like, let's put together this program. And we're both kind of workhorses, like in terms of like making a lot of content, and you know, that's where it came from. That's where it hatched from. And so we have. It's $50 a month, and it's $50 every 4 weeks, and it's full video support for your training. You can message us through the app and ask us some quick questions. So there's kind of like a DM feature as well. And that's what Citizen Athletics is. We have two tiers. And the other important part of it was like, we wanted to make something, you know, we work in behavioral change. We're physical therapists. We know that in order for somebody to start and maintain an exercise program, it has to work for them. And so in our two tiers, the lower tier is a program you can pretty much complete at home with just dumbbells and bands. And so that's the other piece of it, is that we wanted to put a lot of body weight exercises and think of ways that we could make the program scalable for the intro to exercise type person or the person that just wants a quick program to bang out 40 minutes a day, 4 days a week.
Well, how is that transition to... It's essentially paid content at this point. I mean, it's organized paid content. How's the transition from everything's been free, you've built this big audience, to hey, now we have this payment wall? How have you had a lot of like, I guess, kickback from people on that and resistance, or has it been pretty seamless?
Well, so let's look at like somebody like Kelly Starrett. When Kelly Starrett made a payment wall and he put all his stuff behind there, there was kind of first of all, he was one of the first people to do it. So from a like just a first to market thing, you're always going to get pushback. For me, I'm not putting the content that I have behind the paywall. I'm creating new content that's hidden behind a paywall. So I haven't gotten any pushback whatsoever. I've gotten incredible positive feedback and nice notes from people like Shante Cofield or like, you know, Movement Maestro or
that's
like
my girl,
like,
man.
Yeah, exactly. Shante and I talk all the time. And so I've gotten like incredible feedback from people like her that I really respect in the field. And they're like, hey, it's awesome that you're doing something and trying to help make a living while, you know, like, I don't know. I think that people, the people that are your clients, the people that really matter, they respect the fact that we are trying, that we're offering something of value and trying to make a living doing it, you know? So,
well, hey dude, you know, it's, if anybody is spending a lot of time on a social media platform or a look, I have a podcast and this podcast is monetized in a number of different ways. So
yeah,
it's, if you don't, if you're going to take time away from other things, it's opportunity cost. You're losing out on somewhere else. So yeah. if it's just going to be a hobby, you know, then maybe that's all you want. But you've also got 500,000 people that are following, you know, a platform that you have, and you have an opportunity to really kind of move that over to a lot of revenue in a whole nother revenue stream, which is a pretty amazing thing. Like I think about like 10, 15 years ago, like this really wasn't, you know, you couldn't put up pictures and talk to people on social media like this and have this sort of a platform and then be able to leverage it into a digital course. Like it's really interesting the time that we live in and the ability for you to have these multiple revenue streams. And even this thing with BSN, like it sounds like you have a, you know, some sort of affiliation with them, which by the way, I looked at that and you're the only person there that's not showing their chest or abs, bro. You got to get your picture game. You got to get your picture game up to another level. Everybody else is like, at least, I mean, they're all at least showing something, dude. You just look happy.
You want a funny little story? So in the contract that I signed with them, there's one line about how at any given time, I have to be able to present within 3 days a shirtless photo of myself. Just to check in on my physique. And so when I was going through the contract and, you know, back with them and contract negotiations are kind of a pain in the butt. And I'm like, you know, just to let you know, I don't think that this is appropriate for my relationship with you guys. And we were laughing about it. But so BSN reached out to me and they wanted, and it was over a year ago now, but they wanted to do some sort of like value content and provide value for their followership. And asked me if I had any ideas. And we just started talking, got on some conference calls. And they were like, you know, if you think that this is something that could work, we'd love to sign you to a contract and have you be one of our sponsored athletes or whatever. And I was like, well, let's kind of take this from a different standpoint. What if I can be just the title of like head trainer? And so that's what I'm doing. And I'm creating content. And, you know, my goal with every project that I take on is to create value for the people that are going to be watching it or consuming it and have it stay within my kind of like my brand. And so if I can make strength conditioning, physical therapy, hybrid content for them. And you know, a lot of these companies are realizing that a little old Teddy has twice as many followers as they do. And they're like, why can't we use this platform to reach more people? And it's like, well, cause all you're doing is posting shirtless photos of people. Like, yeah. There's nobody wants to see that, you know, So they're all trying to, or a lot of these companies like bodybuilding.com was kind of early on with, we're going to provide content too. We're not just going to sell supplements. And the reason they provide content is because it drives traffic to their website and then they sell more supplements.
Totally.
And so, you know, T Nation is another one. People forget that like T Nation sells a lot of supplements in addition to all that content they have. And so BSN is trying to compete with those kinds of companies and, just put more content out there.
Dude, you're doing some cool stuff, man. It's super cool to see this. You know, I think we were talking a little bit before just how this hybrid, if you want to call it, sort of performance-based approach is becoming more and more popular. And I think it's a really good thing for our profession, you know, and, you know, people like you and the things you're doing now, for students that are watching this and listening to this, like you guys, people are down on physical therapy. I hear it all the time. They're like, oh man, I wish I hadn't gone to physical therapy school. Like, shut the fuck up, man. Figure out how to use your degree to do what you want with it. Like you're doing like that. Like don't be pessimistic about the fact that you got a doctorate. Like there's so many people don't have that. You just have to understand, like you have to be creative and you have so many opportunities now. You just have to go about doing it. So, you know, we do have a decent amount of students. So if there's a student out there and they're just like, oh man, I'm trying to get through school. Like I'm learning about ultrasound. This is bullshit. Like what could you tell them? You know, what advice do you give them to just hang in there if they want to go the performance route?
So I've had two students so far. I really enjoy being a CI. And the main thing that I really harp on is, and you know, when I do my journal reviews every month with Physio Network, like the main thing that I'm always talking about is that PT school and physical therapy in general is teaching you how to think, not how to practice. Learning how to practice takes time. Learning how to practice takes experience. I mean, you know, it all kind of comes together. But what you need to take from PT school is the ability to critically think and figure out what matters and what doesn't. And, you know, I know this is boring, but learning how to read research and learning how to really figure out what matters and what doesn't, I mean, that's, to me, that's everything. And that's, and you get a doctorate, like you just said, that's a great point. You know, I mean, I don't think I would have this position with BSN, or I don't think I would have this many followers or whatever, if I didn't have the doctor in front of my name. I think that that matters, and that helps people to trust you and respect the fact that you took that time to go to school and dedicate yourself and essentially put your life on pause for 3.5 years in order to go achieve that. And, you know, but it's not cheap either. And it costs a lot of money to maintain. So you going to CSM this year?
I am.
Yeah, I'll be there. It's in my backyard. So
Listen, man, I haven't been to an APTA event since 2007. Okay. 2007. I'm coming out of retirement. I'm coming out of retirement.
You're an old man.
Well, it was a student conference. So like, I just started. So it was in San Antonio. The only reason we went, I was in San Antonio for school. It was right there. We had to go as part of our school. And I haven't been since, man. So I'm going this year. We got a lot of people, apparently 12 to 15,000, you know, PTs or whatever. I'm not quite sure what I'm going to do with myself. I feel a bit odd around my counterparts in PT. Like, I fit in much better in the strength and conditioning community. You probably feel similarly.
I feel you on that.
Yeah, maybe we can hang out together and we can deflect all the polo shirts and, you know, tucked in and shit. So, but anyway, yeah, I'll be there, man. I'm looking forward to
it. When we were in PT school and we had practicals, we would all have to line up outside our like main kind of the main gym that the testers would be inside. And I would just jokingly say, oh, look, it's all the PT robots. And I don't think people really appreciated that. And it was my cynicism of just like, yeah, we all look the same freaking like.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do I have to dress up for that? Or can
I
wear?
God, dude, I asked my wife this the other day. I asked her, I was like, can I wear a t-shirt? And she goes, I don't think you can wear a t-shirt. I was looking at like, you know, dress code. It didn't say anything. So I'll probably show up in a hoodie. It's gonna be kind of cold.
That athlete's potential hoodie right there,
bro. Look at this, man. Look at that. Yeah, oh, that's a Georgia State right there.
Hey, my wife went to University of Georgia for grad school.
Oh, there you go.
I spent a lot of time in Athens. Yeah.
Dude, Athens is a fun town. Dude, I'll be up there. I'll look forward to it. And in fact, we haven't even announced it. To our audience yet. I just decided I was going to go the other day. So if you're listening to this, guess what? I'm going to be at CSM. So if you see me and Teddy, come say hello. But here's what I'll leave it with, dude. Not that you need any more followers, but if people are interested in what you're saying and sort of, you know, see what your approach is, you know, where can they go to follow you or learn more about like your company and the things that that you guys are doing from a cash standpoint?
Oh man, I've thought about doing a series of blog posts about just like the business side of things, but I don't have anything out there from a business standpoint. Everything I have, Strength Coach Therapy, all one word, Strength Coach Therapy. That's my Instagram. You can also find me on Facebook if you like to do Facebook. You know, that's where the content is, but it's mostly just instructional exercise videos. And that's pretty much what I have out there right now. Cool. If there are people that like podcasts, assuming if they made it to the end of this one, if you Google my name, I've done a bunch of them. And so those are, you know, a little bit longer form conversation if you want to hear my voice again for another hour.
Of course.
Exactly.
Who doesn't? Now, this has been awesome, man. I really appreciate your time. I know, like I said, we've had people ask me to get you on here for a while now. So it's been fun to chat with you. It's just cool to see somebody in our profession that's blending, you know, strength and conditioning and rehab in the way that so many people are doing now as well and successfully doing so in multiple channels. So, dude, thanks so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Hey, it's great being on. Thanks, Danny.
You got it.
Hey, wait a minute. Just to let you guys know, we are closing in on 200 views on iTunes. That's crazy. Most podcasts hardly get to 100 views, let alone 200. And this is such a niche-specific PT business podcast. That's wild. So let's try to rally the troops and get to 200 reviews for this podcast. The first thing you need to do is you got to subscribe to this sucker, whether it's on iTunes or any other platform that you're listening to on, so you know when new episodes are coming out. The next thing, make sure that you leave a review. I'd love to hear what you have to say. I read all of them. It means a lot to me. The next thing, guys, take a screenshot of whatever episode you're listening to and put it in your stories on Instagram and tag me in it. That's at Danny Matei PT. If you do this, I will repost it. So you'll get a bump, I'll get a bump. We'll share this information with a lot more people because that's the goal, guys. We want to get this information in front of a lot more people. So take a screenshot, share it on Instagram stories, tag me in it, and I will repost it. So here we go. Let's try to get to 200 reviews for the podcast. Thanks for listening.